Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on this edition of Inside Coverage, is the Combine still meaningful? Who made money? Who lost money? And what else did we want to see that we were denied? Plus, why Daniel Jones might be the most interesting and significant piece of NFL free agency. And we'll tell you where Max Crosby might be going. It's Charles Robinson and Frank Schwab at Inside Coverage next. Oh, this is a treat. Back in the home office for the first time in a month. Welcome to Inside Coverage, everybody. The how and the why, any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. We are 1 week from free agency. The combine is in the rearview mirror. The league meeting is right around the corner. The draft is in less than 8 weeks. It never ends, friends. That's why we are here for you. My name is Andrew Siciliano. Charles Robinson is still working hard for you out on the road. Frank Schwab is back with us as well. Friends, it's good to see you both. How we doing?
Go ahead, Frank. Kick it off.
Oh, doing great. I was just sitting here thinking if anybody but Andrew Siciliano went from covering the Olympics to covering the underwear Olympics. Was there anybody else who did that double?
Oh, I like that.
I doubt it. I think you're the only one, Andrew. I think you're the only one.
I could have used that.
The only one to do both.
Yeah, you could have used that.
Please trademark that. Now, someone's going to steal that idea. Like Charles's ideas get stolen all the time.
I just want to know how Frank wasn't in Indianapolis and seemed to do more work than all of us in Indianapolis. That's what I want to know.
I didn't get as many steaks either, I'll tell you that. I was sitting at home eating ramen while you guys were getting fat on ribeyes.
Frank, we did miss you. We truly did. Did you do your work? And again, Charles is right. Frank is a prolific, prolific writer. Did you do your work from like your Sunday home at the local wing joint?
No, I did not. No, was not okay. At Buffalo Wild Wings. Sponsor credit needed for any of this. Just on my couch, hanging out in my basketball shorts, chilling while you guys were working hard. I was just, looking at Twitter and seeing what, Fernando Mendoza had to say. That was it.
I mean, he's a different dude. He said all the right things. He checked all the right boxes. He didn't throw. He was down there on the field. So the combine is over. Let's unpack our notebook, if you will, from the combine, understanding that the combine is exactly what Frank described. It is the underwear Olympics. You can lose some money. You can make some money. No one's fate is sealed at the combine. We got a long way to go. There are 30 visits. There are private workouts. There are pro days. There's a long way to go. And as mentioned, the free agency part of this and the new league year comes before the draft. So teams that might have a glaring need in one position when you go to the combine may not have that glaring need in 10 days. So there's a lot to change. And a lot of fans, regardless of which team you root for, they want answers out of the combine. You're not going to get answers out of the combine. You're just going to try to piece the puzzle together as we go through a long offseason. We went into this draft, and see, Rob, we talked about this on the shows that we did in Indianapolis, saying that this year's draft class is kind of but next year's really good. And we've seen this movie before. I think we come out of this combine, at least for my money, thinking maybe this class is a little bit better. They certainly test well. They're fast. 7 of the 8 position groups at the combine, the quarterbacks being the only one that falls out of this group, set a new positional record for overall speed, like 40-yard dash time. So the O-linemen, the D-linemen, the defensive backs, the wide receivers, everyone other than quarterback ran the you-know-what out of this combine. Is it an overly fast track? Probably. Does that change where these guys get drafted? Likely. Did they make money? Absolutely. So this is a really fast class. It's a really fast class, however, with not a clear answer at quarterback after number one, something we discussed. I think Ty Simpson left Indianapolis clearly as the number two quarterback. Does that mean he's a day one pick? I think it's all but certain he's going to be a day one pick, to whom I have no idea. There are some saying he now goes top 10. I don't in any way buy that. But I also know that between now and April 23rd, all the quarterbacks are going to get pushed up the board. Give me some of your big picture thoughts here after we get done.
Well, I think there's a little bit of revisionist history coming out now that we're done with the event. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, this is it's a great draft after all, because all these guys showed up and ran super fast. OK, awesome. Guys ran super fast. I think what bothers me about this is you saw a number of players who did not go through the process and only did what they felt like they were going to exceed at. So if guys run a good 40, they're going to run a good 40. Go look at the number of running backs that did a three cone. It's like nothing.
No one does.
Running backs don't. Nobody does a three cone anymore. Why? Because it makes you look bad. If you can't do it well, it makes you look bad. And there are questions raised. If you can't run a 40 well, you're not going to do it. I'll give you the top three wide receivers that we really wanted hashed out, right? It was Ohio State's Carnell Tate, the USC's Mekhi Lemon, and Arizona State's Jordan Tyson. Well, Carnell Tate's the only one who ran a 40, and he ran a 4.53, and everybody freaked out, right? Because it's a 4.53, and for the body adjusted ratio, he's like, you know, comes in at like 193 pounds, so very low percentile, right? And then the next day you hear, well, geez, maybe the laser detecting that we used to score the 40s wasn't working correctly because some scouts had him in the 4.4s on hand timing. Okay, let me read you fans in on something. That's an agent, okay? That's an agent of calling around to whatever reporters who will listen and say, hey, man, just so you know, I had a bunch of teams called me and told me Carnell's time was in the 4.4s hand time. Okay, great. Well, I guess what? I bet you some of them were slower hand time than Carnell Tate's 4.53. I think that what disappointed me about this is the wide receiver group, we just did not see enough out of Tate and Lemon and Tyson to really separate out what that stack should look like or how good we should feel about those three guys who up until, you know, last minute I looked were billed as, hey, these are going to be elite level wide receiver prospects. And yet they don't come in and do everything. I look at the overall performance. I think a number of guys put up wonderful performances, but all the elite prospects that put up the greatest performances are at non-premium positions. We're going to talk about that a lot now. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, mm-hmm. Jeremiah Love was amazing. Maybe a top five pick now, right? Sonny Styles, the off-ball linebacker from amazing. Ohio State. And not a premium position, but put up an absolutely amazing combine performance. You know, Caleb Downs, clear and away, even though he didn't do anything, clear and away the top safety on the board. But again, didn't do anything. But again, non-premium position. Right. The guard out of Penn State, Andrew, I'm going to let you pronounce this because I butchered his name like 100 times at the combine.
Okay. It's Vanga Ioane.
Okay.
Vanga is obviously Vanga shortening his first name. His first name is probably.
I just call him Vanga.
Olai Vanga Ioane.
Cool name.
Olai Vanga Ioane.
Okay.
So I just call him Vanga Ioane. Right. And he could be the best O lineman in the entire draft, but he's a guard.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then where do you take him? He's a guard. To your point about premium positions, how high am I taking a guard?
Right. So it really, I think this affects the Jets most because you're sitting there and you're saying, there's a ton of options here, but really would have been great if Arvel Reese had come in and absolutely nuked the entire event.
But he ran a 4.46.
He did. He ran a 4.46, right? But there's still we still exited with the same questions about what's he going to look like in coverage. If he's running forward, no problem. I mean, there's 100%. No doubt he can rush the passer. So also what's his body type going to look like because he's young and there's still I think room there to adjust his body type. So I'm not saying it's we exited saying this confirms that you know this is a down draft. It's a fine draft, but you could ultimately end up being a team in the top five where you're starting to spend picks and money, by the way, because the top five picks get paid a good amount now on non-premium positions, and you have to grapple with, can I just be okay with, let's just go and take a good football player, and as long as he's a good football player, let's not worry about it. Let's just make sure we hit these top five picks. So in some sense, I think the combine was fine. I think the idea that Ty Simpson's a top 10 pick is a joke. It really bothers me because a number of teams were like, look, he came in, he had a good performance, but realistically, and again, you know, this goes back to kind of Bo Nix when Bo Nix was drafted in the 2024 class. There are some teams that look at him and they go, look, in most drafts that did not have a quarterback class that looked like this, he would probably be a second or third round pick. And now
he's going night number one. Mark it down.
I think that just showcases a need at the position, the fact that we have too many starting spots open at the quarterback position and not enough guys. So again, I'm not going to kill it. And it was fun to watch guys work out and exceed, especially at the running. But I brought it up to you guys when we were talking before the show. I am wondering now if we've entered the trend, and it's going to be a staple trend from now on, where agents just tell players, here are the two or three things you do well, or one thing you do well. You're going to go to the combine. That's the only thing you're going to do. And maybe we'll do those things at your pro day, or maybe we won't.
Play the hits.
That's the thing. Yeah, Charles, let me ask you, because you ran it down great. I have really nothing to add from the combine. You hit every big picture. But every year I keep thinking this, and I really think it was highlighted by Marvin Harrison a couple of years ago, who basically just said, whatever, draft me or don't. I don't care. I'm not doing your workouts. And the Cardinals still drafted him, I believe, fourth. He might have saved himself because, honestly, his athleticism hasn't shown up in the NFL. But do you foresee, I mean, in this era kind of a player empowerment, do we get to a point where the combine is kind of obsolete? Because if you're only going to do the events you're good at, and I think you've made the point that we see these record times because you're only going to run the 40 if you're great at it. If you're not, why? Right. Look at Cardinal Tate. I think Cardinal Tate is a great example. Cardinal Tate is better off today if he didn't run the 40. So why should he? What's the point? Like,
see, I think he's going to be fine.
If you get enough players... I think he probably will.
I don't think it's 40 matters, but keep going.
I think you'd agree, though, he'd be better off if he didn't run it at all, right? Like, he didn't help himself.
Here's my thing. I think he's going to be fine, but I think he's helped by the fact that Jordan Tyson didn't do anything. I think he's helped by the fact that Mekhi Lemon, did the gauntlet, but didn't run. Like, here's my thing. I presume now, if you don't do something at the combine, you're hiding it. You're hiding something. And then I want to see if you do it your pro day. And if you don't do your pro day, like, let's remember Braylon Allen. Obviously, Frank went to the University of Wisconsin. He knows Braylon Allen really well. Extremely productive, extremely young player who cranked at Wisconsin. And next thing you know, Braylon Allen wasn't doing anything ever. And he was saying, hey, it's injury related or whatever. Teams were like, no way. He just wouldn't test great. Even teams that thought he would be a good NFL player, and obviously he was injured last year, but... You know, once Braylon Allen stepped on a football field in the NFL for the Jets, he had some snaps where you're like, oh, okay. No, he might be okay if you can get some consistency and keep him healthy. And that hasn't happened. But again, you talk about Marvin Harrison. I think it's more like a Braylon Allen where all of a sudden it was just like everything was blown off. He wasn't doing anything. And I don't want to be the old man shouting at the clouds in this, but I do think that there is going to be more and more of a trend of agents just telling players, we're gonna let it fall where it may. Go in, don't do anything that will hurt you, and we'll figure it out like during the process. So,
and then you're not getting a good read on a guy, because if he's only doing the stuff he's great at, but that's fine. Like, these players,
it's just the tape.
Why put yourself in harm's way? Why, if you got the tape, like, again, Marvin Harrison had the tape.
I don't blame
Christian McCaffrey by the end of the process.
By the end of the process,
Christian McCaffrey said, no more individual workouts. You got all my stuff.
He was doing wide receiver drills. And Jeremiah Love was doing wide receiver drills. I commend a guy like Jeremiah Love, who everyone knew he was on a very short list of elite blue chip players. He showed up there. Mm-hmm. He ran a 4.37 or 4.36 and then said, you know what? I'm going to run again because I could do better than that. And you want me to do wide receiver drills? Or you want me to catch balls down the sideline out of the backfield? I'm going to do that as well. I'm going to work out. I'm going to show you I have hands. And I have nothing to hide because I am that good. And he is one of those guys where you go, do we take a running back top five? Yeah, he's good enough to take top five. He's good enough to take top 10. There is a legitimate conversation to be had now. Does he even get to 9 at Kansas City? There is always going to be room at the combine for guys like Monroe Freeling, who's a one-year starter at tackle, left tackle for Georgia, who was right on the cusp of that very top group of tackles. But when you show up there and blow away the combine, and he was on the field Sunday with the other offensive linemen, people go, no, I see it. You're young, you're an athlete, you're a basketball player, you're 6'7", you only have the 1 year of starting, but your testing is so good. I may put you as the number one tackle here ahead of the Utah guys or ahead of Blake Miller at Clemson. I'm going to put you up there or Maui Noah, who's a right tackle, who's maybe a guard eventually at Miami. I'm going to put you up there because you did test, so I commend you. A guy like the Arkansas quarterback, like Tyron Green,
Mike Washington Jr., right? The same. Arkansas running back who
bounced around and then runs a 4-3-3.
Well, I wouldn't even say really bounce. Some teams, what they liked about him beyond the fact that I think he was like 226 and ran a 4-3-3, he was like 6'2. It was the fact that they watched tape and they're like, okay, this guy flashed. He had one season at Arkansas where it's really high level production. But I think they also like the kid started off at Buffalo. Then he went to New Mexico State, and then he went to Arkansas. Like, he basically was like, all right, I'll go the hard way. You know, I didn't get taken where I wanted to be taken out of college or out of high school. You know, I took the opportunity I had, and then I worked my way up through the portal. He's like one of those portal stories where you're like, I think teams like the portal in that scenario because you're like, he kept stepping up every year. He was like, you know, after he'd spent 3 years at Buffalo, then he went to New Mexico State, and then he went to Arkansas, and then he went out here. And he performed, you know, he ran the 40. He checked in where, you know, I think teams were happy where he checked in. I think he showcased the ability he can catch the football. So that, like, to me, that's what I really like about the combine now, is that the portal has opened these opportunities where we're seeing guys who build into the platform rather than some guys who, you know, frankly, like, I don't want to say silver spoons, but there are definitely some silver spoon players out there, right, who don't have to move around, who don't have to fight their way to the opportunity. And then when they get the opportunity, blow the roof off. I think that's what Mike Washington Jr. did.
No, that's great. I just wonder about the guys who, we talk about the guys who did great, the Mike Washingtons, Sadiq did great. There are guys who hurt themselves at the combine. I just wonder about the future of the combine, where at some point, if I'm a player, I'm like, I'm just going to let it fall where it may, as you said a couple minutes ago.
Okay, I'll pose a question to you guys. Let me pose this question to both of you. What if it got to the point, and they won't do it because they need the medicals so much.
That's the most important part.
Yeah.
What if the NFL says, you know what? Maybe we need to change the combine. So here's the deal. You're going to come in for one or two things. You're going to come in for the medical and nothing, or you're going to come in for the medical and everything. And that's what we're going to decide when we determine the on-field workouts. If you're not going to do something, you're not going to do anything. And if you will come in and do the medicals, great. Then this falls on NFL teams. Now the NFL teams are just going to have to adjust and figure it out, because as Frank said,
and they don't want to do that.
Yeah, Marvin Harrison Jr.
so much.
I do think the Cardinals figured out once they got Marvin Harrison Jr. on the field consistently, they're like, okay, the top end speed is not, it's not great enough for him to separate consistently. Now we have to figure out ways for him to win routes on the NFL level, which is, I don't think they fully expected that. And then that's what ultimately ended up happening in Arizona.
But let me push back against him. He's a guy, and you're totally right there, C-Rob, but he's a guy that played at Ohio State against the best competition, right? Who played in the playoff. Marvin Harrison is a guy that you should not have had trouble scouting.
I get it.
You shouldn't have. Like, he's now, if I throw on a Mac wide receiver and I go, I don't know. Like, how do I figure out who this guy is? He's not going up against Quinyon Mitchell in every game.
Andrew, say he came out and
ran. I need to see him at the combine or the Senior Bowl.
Yeah. Let's say he came out and ran, and he ran 4.55 to 4.6. Would you not go back to the tape and go, okay, now we have this piece of information. Let's see if we might have missed something here. Because we've been waiting for this guy for so long. The presumption is he's going to be a superstar the second he steps on the field. That's how everybody talked about Marvin Harrison Jr. Then he didn't run. He didn't do the agility stuff. He didn't do anything. I wonder if he had done those things, if it would cause some teams like the Cardinals to go back to the tape and go, should we have any reservation at all about this pick? And if so,
and then you just cost yourself $10 million. you know?
Frank, you're not wrong, man. That's the thing. I can't blame the players and I can't blame the agents. And, you know, the teams are where they're at. But, you know, it is what the combine's kind of become now, right? Like, I thought everyone was going to work out.
You only work out if you know you're going to do great or if you just have to do it. Like, if you're going to be a fifth round pick, yeah, you can't say no. But you only are going to work out in the events you are great in. That's not doing anybody any good, really, if you're an NFL team.
And then you have a guy like Talen Green, who has played at Boise State for 3 years, mixed results, went to Arkansas, obviously, you know, different level of competition to the SEC and played well. His testing was off the chart good. Like, hey, it's Terrell Pryor. Let's make him a wide receiver. Nope. He's going to be a quarterback. Okay, great. Well, his quarterback tape isn't very good, but someone's going to look at the athletic profile, which was record-setting athletic profile, and go, I'm going to make him a quarterback. I'm going to make him a quarterback. Well, he is a quarterback, but I'm going to develop him as a quarterback, and I'm probably going to overspend on him, but the guy has a high ceiling, so, hey, I'm going to take that ball of clay. Final thought on Marvin Harrison here. I'm actually the guy that would call the Cardinals right now and say maybe he was let down by bad quarterback play, although McBride and Wilson would fight back and say, hey, we still made plays, and say, I'll offer you a day two pick or a day three pick that goes to a day two pick, and I'll take Marvin Harrison off your hands and see what I can do, because I would love that opportunity if I'm another team. Am I wrong?
I think
the Cardinals can't take that L.
Monty Osford is toast if that happens. I think there's just no way. Like, you either make him work or you win games and you suffer the fact that he is what he is. And by the way, there's been injuries there. As Andrew said, there's also questions about quarterback. I'm not killing this guy at all.
It's only 2 years in. He might be a really good player. Like,
but it is only 2 years in. And
just talking about him setting this like precedent of, if I don't work out, you're still going to draft me where you want to draft me. Like, that is teams always complain and, oh my God, I hate that this kid isn't competitive. We're not going to draft. You're going to draft him. That's a nonsense. That is absolute nonsense. NFL teams.
Remember when we held it against you when you didn't play in the bowl game?
Yeah, that's stupid. No, because it's dumb. Like, players should be able to do what they want. I'm all for player empowerment. And the whole, like, I'm only going to the events I want to do. Good. Good for you. Don't do the NFL's dog and pony show. Because we've seen time after time, it hurts a lot of guys as much as it helps guys. So don't do it. And I'm not going to be one of these media members going, oh, my God, I can't believe this guy. He's not competitive. He won't compete. Whatever. That's his choice. This is his job interview. He knows the pros and cons. He's got an agent telling him, here's the good and the bad from it. Do what you want to do. Let's not be clutching pearls over this, all right? Like, NFL teams are still going to draft guys, probably where they would have anyway. And I think the combine hurts more guys than it helps them, to be honest.
I just like to see guys compete. That's all. Like, I really enjoy that guys, when they get out there and compete, it means...
Both can be true.
It's fun. Yeah. You're right. It Andrew's absolutely
right. 4 years of tape of them competing on a football field and not doing the gauntlet. Like, there's a lot of tape of guys competing.
That's fair.
But wait a minute. We have so many guys that go there and blow away the testing, and then you go, I had this conversation with a draft guy, like someone with a team executive this week, where it's like, oh my God, he blew away the combine. Now I got to go back and look at his tape, because on tape, I didn't see it. Okay, but he's really fast. So is it the team's fault, the quarterback's fault, the scheme's fault? Did he get hurt? Was there another situation going on at school that I need to know about? Because he won the underwear Olympics, but does that mean I'm going to overdraft him? Is he any good? Is he a diamond in the rough? Or is he a guy that just runs fast and can't play football?
I'll be real here, too. Like, when I watched Kenyon Sadiq, I sent texts to a lot of people saying, I don't get it. Like, why? I mean, he had good production last year, Oregon, but the guy I just saw, I'm like, how is this dude not a absolute superstar? Davis, like, just, I mean, unbelievable. And so, you know, and some of the feedback I got was, you know, it was interesting. It was kind of some mixed opinions about why, you know, he just didn't absolutely nuke it at Oregon last year.
He's your move guy. He's not your big tight end, but man, he can catch the ball and he's productive.
Man, he looked good.
Yeah, like, I went in there a couple of years ago and did an Oregon game. This was but with his 6'5", 2004, before he really blew up, and all the Oregon people were like, yeah, look at that. I'm sorry, 2024? Yeah, keep an eye on that guy. It's him. He's from Idaho. I mean, it's not as if he was the biggest recruit in the world. And he blew up. He's going to be in the first round, but, you know, beyond that, who are your other tight ends? There are certainly other tight ends, but none that ran as fast as Kenyon Sadiq, a 4.39, the fastest ever time for a tight end at the combine. All right. We got months to figure this out. We're 7.5 weeks out from the draft. Lots more. We'll empty the notebook as the week continues here from the combine. The other part of the combine is, we're not going to call next Monday legal tampering. That is actually the start of a legal negotiation period. But everything that goes on behind the scenes, what we heard at the combine specifically about the quarterbacks, and there were two trades made on Monday that are worth talking about as well. It is Inside Coverage on Yahoo Friends. Don't go anywhere. It's Inside Coverage on Yahoo. As we sit here recording this on Monday, hi, I'm Andrew, C. Rob, and Frank Schwab with me as well, as always. As we sit here on Monday, we are a week away from the opening of the window to negotiate contracts and trades and everything, but specifically free agency contracts for the new league year, which begins on Wednesday, the 11th of March at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So there are a lot of moving pieces between now and then. Specifically, guys, the deadline on Tuesday, that would be Tuesday the 3rd, is at 4 o'clock for franchise tags. And for that matter, transition tags. I want to go back to 2023. The New York Giants had a dilemma. Do they use the tag on their quarterback, Daniel Jones, or their running back in Saquon Barkley? The Colts right now have a dilemma. Do they use their tag on their quarterback, Daniel Jones, who's coming off an Achilles injury? Can they get a long-term deal done? Or do they use it on a wide receiver in Alec Pierce? They want to get the deal done with the quarterback. But if they don't, then they got to tag him. They have said that. They've also said, see, Rob, they don't want to use the tag. But if they have to use the tag, there's a legitimate question here. Do they use the franchise tag at like $43 million or the transition tag, which is a right of first refusal tag at about $6 million less? That $6 million means something because they could use that money on Alec Pierce. But if they lock it in at 43, the franchise tag number, then it kind of ties their hands. Can they get a deal done with Daniel Jones? If it's a transition tag, I wouldn't put it past the Minnesota Vikings or another team to say, we'll jump in on that. We'll try to sign you. And then if you're the Colts, you're letting somebody else write your contract that you now have to match. How do you think this plays out in Indianapolis?
I'm going to call my shot. I'll probably be wrong here, but I'm going to call my shot based on what every conversation I had at the combine. I think that they will. I think if they have to, the wide receiver is the player they'll tag. Okay, Alec Pierce.
Interesting.
I just think that's a lot of money for a player coming off an Achilles. Okay, and I think that there is a belief that no team is going to rush out there and pay him this kind of money, either the tags, the franchise, or the transition tag. Okay, for a guy coming off an Achilles, where you have to know what the medical looks like, and then typically there's a gap year for the Achilles just in terms of the player fully returning to the level that he was at the time that he tore the Achilles, right? And so I doubt the appetite for Daniel Jones for a 35 to $40 million payday, a $37 to $43 million payday. I just absolutely doubt the appetite for that. And I think in this scenario, with that torn Achilles, the mistake that you're going to make, it's a lot harder to make the mistake with Alec Pierce, who I think that they are very, very confident is now ready to ascend into being one of the better wide receivers in the NFL. And by the way, you will absolutely lose in free agency. There's almost no doubt you're going to lose him in free agency. I don't think it's an absolute guarantee you're going to lose Daniel Jones. I think you have an ability to be more competitive with Daniel Jones than maybe you do, with Pierce. So I think, and again, this could be wrong 24 hours from now, I think they will, it's more likely that they go the wide receiver route and then they try to see what they can get done with Daniel Jones, financially on a limited window commitment, because I know there are not a lot of quarterbacks out there. I just don't know that the window of what we saw from Daniel Jones is enough for someone to blow out the money because of the fact that he's coming off of an Achilles injury.
I don't disagree. And another thing about the franchise, like once you franchise Daniel Jones, that's the new level. You can't go back, right? Like you can't go to it. Right. Okay, we're going to try to negotiate a long-term deal, but we're not going to give you $43 million. We're going to go back to 35. Right. It's going to be like, yeah, well, he can't really roll pay for back. 43. Right. So that's a point of no return. That's his level. You got to pay it at that point. But I think just, I wonder about the Colts' fear of losing him. Like you said, like he's probably not going to leave, but what if he does? What do you do then? You go back to Anthony Richardson, say, hey, let's make this thing work, guy. Like, nah, that probably ain't the path you want to go down. And we all know that just a year ago when we were sitting here talking, Chris Ballard, Shane Steichen, they were on the hot seat. Like there was, yes, they had a good half of the season until Daniel Jones got hurt, but they know that they're one bad season away. I mean, if Daniel Jones becomes the next Sam Darnold and goes on and does great things elsewhere, well, you don't do that well and don't make the playoffs, you're probably losing your job. So I just the concern, the worry about the worst case scenario of
this sound
great. We got Alec Pierce back and nobody to throw him the ball. Like,
okay.
That is what really worries me there.
This sounds like the Giants dilemma again, right? We're back there again.
It is. Yep.
We're back there with Saquon and Daniel Jones. You're saying we can't lose the quarterback. Yeah, you could have. Mm-hmm. And you completely screwed the pooch and you let the running back go. And then the quarterback turned out to be, let's be honest, for what he produced it with the Giants, was mediocre at best. He was absolute mm-hmm. mediocre player, was not worth what that tag was. We're back there again. If you think the difference between keeping your job or losing your job is either having or not having Daniel Jones, then the decision's made for you. Okay.
Oh, come on, Joe. You know it's more than that. You know that if they lose Daniel Jones in free agency, they have no other – what other option do they go to? They could easily go 5-12 next year.
And then they are back.
Not because of Daniel Jones.
I mean, they were wondering what they're going to do with Daniel Jones, Frank.
They could.
They could go 5-12 with Daniel Jones coming off an Achilles.
They're not thinking that way, though. They're not thinking that way, though. They're thinking about the disaster scenario of, oh, my God, Anthony Richardson's our week one starting quarterback. What do we do?
And you blew a top five pick on him.
If a busted Daniel Jones is the difference between your job at this point, if a busted $43 million Daniel Jones is the difference between you having a job or not, you probably should. I'm just going to be real here. Like, honestly, if you're in that kind of a corner and you really have nothing else to play, you have no cards in the deck at that point. That's it. You got nothing left. That's not a great scenario to be in. And really the only scenario where it works out.
This is not a great scenario
for them. So Daniel Jones would basically have to be a medical miracle. He's going to be a medical miracle. He's going to come back and he's going to be worth $43 million for you next season. Yeah, I mean, look, show me a player coming off an Achilles who played at their top level the next year, Frank.
You could go get Jimmy Garoppolo for half of that if you wanted to. I'm with you, C-Rob, on the idea. Because what made Daniel Jones so great, look, Shane Steichen's play calling and Daniel Jones and Jonathan Taylor, they were making beautiful music for the first half of the season, but a huge part of it was his mobility. And when he suffered the leg injury, before the Achilles injury, and he couldn't move anymore, a lot of that magic disappeared. And then he blew the Achilles out, and then it was all over. But yeah, you are hoping that when he comes back, he has at least some of that mobility, but it's an Achilles. It's a second half of the season Achilles. And there's a difference between return to play and return to performance. Those are two totally different things. But it's a franchise that was wandering through the desert in like this biblical Exodus way for 40 years after Andrew Luck's injury. And they finally found Daniel Jones. And now they run the risk of losing him. I'm with you. You can't risk losing him. But you're kind of backed into a corner as to how you handle it financially. And it's all part of a bigger puzzle here with the other quarterbacks. People just assume, oh, Kyler's going to be out there or Aaron Rodgers is going to Pittsburgh. There are a lot of assumptions that we've made that aren't necessarily locked in. Like, let me look at Kyler's contract here for a second, because we all agree he's played his last out with the Cardinals. But how these next 10 days play out, it's interesting. So 36.8 of Kyler's 42.5 million for 2026 is already guaranteed. He has coming up a $17 million roster bonus on March 15th. So that's next Sunday. Two Sundays from now. after, like 4 days after the new league year kicks in. So technically, the Cardinals don't have to set him free. They could squat on him those first 4 or 5 days of the new league year. And then on March 16th, he has a base of 19.5 for 2027 that's going to kick in. We all know he's not going to be on the roster there. But if you're one of those teams that is hoping to find a quarterback answer immediately, the Cardinals could screw that up. And look at the Steelers. Like Aaron Rodgers, if he doesn't tell them by the start of the new league year, can you afford to wait and sit on your hands and not immediately go find a new answer? Right? Like there are all these pieces that we assume will move that have to move now.
Okay. Yeah. Let me just real quick. 13 games of Daniel Jones. 13 games, and now he's an unlosable player. Just give me 13 games of Daniel Jones. Unlosable. Just give me a
what's
second.
The replacement
unlosable
cost?
Player. Unlosable player, who, by the way, in those 13 games, was aided by Jonathan Taylor playing at a near MVP level.
Of course.
It's not an MVP level, right? Okay, let me rattle off the Daniel Jones wins last year. It was 13.
You don't 13 games. Like Daniel
here are
Jones.
Here are the games. Beat Miami. Beat Denver. Great. Beat Denver at home. Awesome. Beat Tennessee. You beat Tennessee. Yeah. You beat the Las Vegas Raiders. You beat the Arizona Cardinals. Mm. You beat the Los Angeles Chargers. That's the second quality win.
That's good.
You beat the You beat the Tennessee Titans. You beat the Atlanta Falcons.
Almost
you
beat the Rams.
Two not quality terrible. Wins. Two quality wins.
Two and a half. Right? Give the Falcons a half. Give the Falcons a half.
You would have beaten the Rams if A.D. Mitchell hadn't dropped the ball on the goal line.
Okay, so the Denver quality win, he threw one touchdown pass, right? Okay, so there's your quality win. Beats Denver, throws one touchdown pass. Hey, the Chargers quality win. And by the way, this was at the Chargers. So this is an impressive game. Threw a couple touchdown passes. Very efficient game. Good, very good win. No, and it was a dominant win, by the way. I don't know. It's not that I don't like Daniel Jones.
So would you
it's
not pay him at all? Like, because you're going to have to pay Daniel Jones.
Frank, I would keep the wide receiver. I would keep the wide receiver, and I would force the 49ers to trade me Mac Jones if I had to. Before I paid Daniel Jones $43 million.
Come on.
43. Oh, come on. Come on. You're sitting here saying Daniel Jones versus Mac Jones? You can still have your Indiana Jones? I mean, whatever, dude. Like,
all the Joneses.
Come on, man.
Get Burt Jones out of retirement. Works. Get them all.
Can Mac Jones keep up with the other Jones? Or are we keeping up with the Joneses?
Keeping up the Joneses,
so
yeah.
Daniel Jones with his busted Achilles. I mean, you just can't let that guy go. How dare you go and get Mac Jones? How dare you?
At least he doesn't have a Jones fraction.
I don't know, man. I don't even know. Mac. Like, the 49ers aren't even trading Mac Jones unless they get an awesome offer. Why would they?
This is like arguing between the best hungry man dinner. This is like ridiculous. This is argument. Wow. Absolutely.
You just compared him to a microwavable dinner.
Salisbury steak, baby.
The salt content of those are just ridiculous.
When you guys clip this, keep this. I apologize because I don't want to just kill this guy, but Frank has pissed me off to the point where I feel like I am in this like ridiculous fourth dimension where Daniel Jones is now Superman and any other option is just straight garbage. And it doesn't make sense to me given the history and the injury. Okay, Frank, we can pick someone else. You want to pick a different quarterback? It's still
sure,
a guy
nobody
for the,
out there. For the, that's my point. There's nobody you're going to tell me who they're
I'm gonna
there's
call
the answer. Like,
Jimmy I'm going to call
like, what?
We've done 13 minutes on Daniel Jones. Let's go to Aaron Rodgers. Can we agree? Let's move on.
Sure.
Aaron Rodgers going to be a Steeler? And do we all agree that if he is going to be a Steeler, they need to know like now?
Yes.
I would say yes.
Okay. They need to know. Like they can't wait on this. They can't. This can't be last year. But I also think my thing with Aaron Rodgers is I think the Steelers would be better off in the long run if Aaron Rodgers took his time and they were like, we got to move on. Or if Aaron Rodgers said, I'm done playing. Because I don't think going down this path with a 43-year-old Aaron Rodgers is getting you where you want to go. Just at some point, somebody needs to just slap the option out of their hand and say, no more. We're having an intervention. We're not doing Aaron Rodgers again. This is not working. We're not doing this with you, Mike McCarthy. Go on a different path. Try something else because we've seen the upside of Aaron Rodgers. It's fine. But it's no different than what the Steelers have done the last 5 years, where they're just barely 500 and getting blown out in the playoffs.
The answer is going to come from the Steelers. Look, bottom line, because there is an element of deadline here. I do think that there will be, I think, three teams really in play for Malik Willis. And I think the Steelers are the one in kind of in the weeds. And anyone who comes out here and makes any declarative statements, apparently they're going to their text messages with Aaron Rodgers, which are right between their text messages with the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus. They don't exist, okay? Aaron's not telling anybody else. He's going to tell the Steelers, right? That's what we're going to find out. So watch how the Steelers move. If the Steelers are silent and they don't move on a quarterback, they don't become involved with Malik Willis, then I think that is ultimately your answer. I think, and by the way, I think they could play out just like they did last season. Aaron Rodgers maybe indicates to them behind closed doors or to Mike McCarthy directly, hey, I'm coming. I'm feeling like I'm going to come back and I'm going to play. And they could still go and dip into the quarterback pool in the draft in the middle rounds, where I do think there could potentially be a developmental player that you could sit down behind Aaron Rodgers and hope that between Will Howard and another player, you could come out with your quarterback of the future. And by the way, Mike McCarthy's not a young coach. They, you know, and the Steelers roster is not young. It needs to win now. So to me, it's if they don't get the call from Aaron Rodgers quickly, and we don't know that information, it will be how they guide themselves through the quarterback market. And I think specifically with Malik Willis, if there's no involvement whatsoever with Malik Willis, I think that could be indicative.
And if I'm just processing this here, is there a world, because as you said, with the text messages, where they... You got to read the room. If they don't go get a quarterback, obviously that kind of says everything. Do they in that world keep saying, we don't know, we don't know, we don't know, and try to fool people? I don't know what strategic advantage. Like, it would be great if they could get to draft day and still have everyone else guessing. But draft day's 7 weeks away.
I mean, we were all guessing until the first round of the draft last year, right? And then they passed on a quarterback. We're like, okay, well, that's probably a pretty good indication. Yeah. Oh, let's look at the players they selected anyway, the draft. When, you know, the players they selected in the draft were, I think, higher floor, lower ceiling players that were more of a win now mode. Everything they had done really up until that point was all about a win now mode. I think the Steelers will telegraph that. I really do. Or like, maybe we're going to get the word that Aaron Rodgers is just like, yeah, guess what? Can't make the commitment to you. If you're going to, like he said last year, can't make the commitment. If you got to do something else, go ahead and do something else. And then they try to get involved with Malik Willis. But again, I think we're going to find out once we see how the quarterback market starts to break down, and I think Malik Willis will be the bellwether, I think, with Arizona, I think with Miami and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Those are the three teams that I'm staring at with Malik Willis to be the bellwether of kind of how this is all going to kick off.
Can I throw a curveball at you? I'm just going to throw this against the wall. I'm mixing metaphors here. You guys tell me what you think. The Arizona Cardinals have Marvin Harrison, Michael Wilson, Trey McBride, warm weather, the NFC East, and Aaron Rodgers' former head coach, his little brother, as the new head coach and play caller. Is there a world in which Rodgers says, it's only an hour flight from Van Nuys, I'm close to Malibu? How about the Arizona Cardinals?
Anybody? Cardinals need to say no. Just say no.
Anybody?
He's a 43-year-old quarterback. No, no, no. Cardinals need to say no. What's the point? What is the point? What is the point? Just go
Chicago. You got to face the Rams, the Seahawks, and the 49ers.
The Rams were the one that we all kind of sort of felt that he wanted last year, other than the Vikings, right? If Stafford ended up being a Raider. But he didn't.
And the 49ers didn't draft him, right? So
the 49ers didn't draft him.
I guess it could be a little mini revenge tour. I'm with Frank. I doubt it. I don't think so. Okay. I think I really
people got to give up this Aaron Rodgers thing, man. Aaron Rodgers is not anybody's answer. Maybe for the Vikings. That's one team that actually does make a little sense.
That is
everybody else. Don't do it.
I think it's Pittsburgh or nothing, but with like what Frank said, I think if for some reason the Vikings feel a sense of desperation and they're not getting anybody, you know, they don't get a shot really at anyone. Maybe there's this 1 year. But I'll tell you this, too, with the Vikings. I don't, especially coming out of the combine, I don't get the sense that they're hunting for somebody to compete with J.J. McCarthy. I think they're looking for a starter. Mm. I truly believe that.
I agree with you.
Oh, wow.
100%. Wow. Yeah. And note, when back when Kwesi was still GM, when Kevin O'Connell and Kwesi Adolfo-Mensah had their end of the season pressers, they were very careful. They didn't use the word compete. They kept, both of them kept saying, we want to add depth to our room.
Yeah.
Depth to our quarterback room. If they thought J.J. McCarthy was ready to be the guy, and they have a team they think that is ready to compete, and they're going to cut Aaron Jones and Javon Hargrave, by the way. That is news over the weekend to try to lower some of that that cap burden. If they thought he was ready to compete, they wouldn't be talking about bringing in anybody that could potentially start. They would talk about bringing in a guy who could be a reliable backup if J.J. for some reason can't go midseason because he has been injury prone. That's not what they're talking about, which means they want a guy who will start. Real quick, does Tua Tagovailoa in the next 10 days find a starter job elsewhere? Frank.
Ooh, maybe like a short term, like Atlanta, like, okay, start until Penix is ready.
Until Penix is healthy?
I don't.
Kind of thing?
Yeah, but I can't see a team being like, yes, Tua, you're our preferred starter. But I will say, like, what was it, 3 years ago he led the NFL passing yards? Like, and he's 20-whatever years old. Maybe. There's going to be such desperation at quarterback this offseason that I can't say no to that. I just can't sit here and tell you no, Tua's not going to start next year, because we're going to get to week one, as I've said many times already. We're going to get to week one and be like, oh my goodness, that team is starting that quarterback? Week one of the season? Really? That's their option? So I can't rule it out for Tua.
See you, Rob.
There's a pretty good chance Tua plays with a veteran minimum, right? And so I think that opens up a lot of options. I think teams are going to sit there and go, look, we either need, I mean, if you're the Falcons, yeah, we could use a quarterback up front, or, hey, we got boxed out of quarterback options and we're kind of stuck. Or you're just the Jets and you're saying, hey, we'll take a season flyer on him if he wants to do a one-year deal here. Yeah, it's in cold weather and we all know what the, you know, gets to be cold and it's really windy and it's not the ideal place for him. I'm just saying, if there are teams that run out of quarterback options, or just look at him as enticing as a one-year, hey, let's give it a shot and see what happens, kind of like Daniel Jones in Indianapolis last year. I think there are options on the table. So, yeah, there's what you said at the beginning, right? There could be as many as 9 teams that really realistically don't have a starter that they absolutely know they can count on week one. There's not 9 starters out there, especially if you take 2 out of the mix.
Mac Jones, right, though.
Coming
Mac
up.
Jones
would be. Yeah, Mac Jones. Yeah,
I like Mac Jones, by the way.
Mac Jones.
I like Mac Jones. I like Daniel Jones.
Mac Jones. I really don't. I really have nothing against Mac
coming
Jones.
Up. There were 2 trades on Monday. Both of them involved the Houston Texans. For who, for what? We'll tell you on Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage on Yahoo. There are a couple of trades made on Monday, which means, well, they can't become official until next Wednesday, the start of the new league year. But, hey, that's what happens when GMs run into each other at the Combine and have coffee at the JW Starbucks. They don't throw hands. They actually, you know, get business done. So,
you're keeping that. We're not redoing that.
There's no high C, Robin, Frank. There's no Thrilla in vanilla latte. They actually just testing that line out.
Working on this. Huh?
C, Rob, I used it. I used it last week, and you didn't even. I don't think you heard it. I think you were too busy going, who are these tiny people sitting next to me? But regardless,
yeah, Frank missed out on the Russian nesting doll joke.
I saw that. That was great. Our guy Neil from overseas. Yeah.
This just in. I'm not tall. Jory, also not tall. I'm taller than Jory. Charles, the size of both of us put together. He's tall. So it was a funny look. Anyway.
Nobody wants to be the biggest Russian nesting doll in that joke, okay? I just want to say that. I want to point that out. Like, I would much rather be the middle one or the smaller one. I want to be the biggest one.
I wish I wasn't tethered here. Over there in my closet in 2013, something like that, I was walking down the street in Prague. And I stumbled into the store with all these tchotchkes, you know, it's just little whatever nonsense figurines and everything. And they had Russian nesting dolls for every NFL team. Not exactly league licensed merchandise, let's put it that way. And I bought the Rams one, which was like Sam Bradford. And then it's like Chris Long, and you keep it, and it's They're garbage, but they're hysterical. I'm gonna bring it out tomorrow. Now that we mentioned this, I see it. It's over there, but I can't reach it because I'm tethered. All right, let's talk about the trades. The Texans had a running back issue all year. They never had Joe Mixon. They're probably going to cut him now. No one knows what the real injury was, but he wasn't there. They drafted Woody Marks, nice player, probably more of a number two or a third down back. Nick Chubb, they tried. I love Nick Chubb. He wasn't going to be the number one. So today they went out and they made a trade. They got David Montgomery from the Detroit Lions. So Sonic and Knuckles are breaking up. There has been plenty of reports that David Montgomery wanted out. They give him his wish today and they send him to Houston. In return, they get Juice Scruggs, who's a nice piece for the offensive line, a young piece, as Graham Glasgow was cut and he is retiring. And they get a fourth round pick. And they send back David Montgomery and it's Juice Scruggs, a fourth round pick, and a seventh round pick for David Montgomery. I like the move for the Houston Texans. They get a reliable number one back. I do want to point out, though, and start with you here, Frank, David Montgomery is heading into year number eight. They're not exactly trading for a young man. Yeah. He had 3 years in Chicago, 4 years in Detroit, or the other way around. Regardless, this is going to be year number eight. What do you think?
And I preface this by saying I like David Montgomery. I think he's a very good back. I think he runs hard between the tackles. He's versatile. He can catch the ball. By all accounts, good leader. Everything, you got to like everything about David Montgomery. But does it matter if you don't have an offensive line? Like, it just seems like the Texans are like, our running game stinks. Here's how we fix it. We get a running back. No. That's not really the problem. The fact that you have one of the five worst offensive lines in football is the problem. And I'm not saying Juice Scruggs was going to fix that either, but trading Titus Howard earlier in the day, how does this get you closer to having a good offensive line? So you look and you say, well, David Montgomery put up these numbers with the Lions. He could do that here too. Well, no, he was running behind Penei Sewell and that elite offensive line with the Lions. You don't have that. You just traded for a 29-year-old running back who I think has a lot of miles left because he was splitting a lot of time with Jahmyr Gibbs and all that. And I do like him as a player, but I look at this from the Texans side. And I'm saying, I need to see your plan at offensive line here before I really give you a good grade for this. I don't like that trade at all for the Texans. It could change if they fix their offensive line and free agency and all that. And even from the Lions aspect, I like what they got back. It was a good haul, fourth and a seventh, and a young offensive lineman for what amounts to be a 29-year-old running back. But the Lions, having two backs is such a big part of what they do. They don't have a second back. And you can't just give Jahmyr Gibbs. I know everybody, especially fantasy football players, want to see Jahmyr Gibbs get like 35 carries a game, but that's not realistic. He's 202 pounds. So how the Lions replace David Montgomery becomes a question for them. So I kind of come out of this trade saying, I have questions about both teams here and if they got better now.
Yeah, I mean, I think Frank talking about the offensive line with the Texans, especially after trading Titus Howard, I'm like, okay, I don't know. That line is not even close to being comparable to the Detroit Lions. By the way, David Montgomery has gotten mileage on him. He suffered a knee injury. You know, his best football was with Ben Johnson. When Ben Johnson was balancing out that rushing attack for the Detroit Lions, I do like him as a player. I don't know that I like him necessarily behind the Houston Texans offensive line, but it leads me to believe the Texans must have something up their sleeve with the offensive line. They must have something in mind.
They better.
I mean, they must have something in mind to attack the offensive line. And I also think the fact that this trade went down after the combine, it makes me wonder, like, did Detroit go to the combine kind of sitting there going, knowing, okay, look, David wants to be paid, but we're probably not going to do that, but let's make sure we go to the draft and look at this running back class and see if maybe there's something we like that we can pair with Jahmyr Gibbs. Because I agree with Frank. I think they will continue to have a balanced backfield, and Gibbs will probably be the higher end of a shared carry situation. But I wonder if Detroit came out of the combine saying, okay, here's a couple guys that we like. We kind of feel like we like what we saw from them at the combine. And so this availability makes sense, especially with what we're getting in return. We'll see with Scruggs. You know, I don't know. You don't see a guy who's drafted where he's drafted and gets dealt like this. You know, Detroit, you're probably sitting there going, maybe there's some upside there and we can get it out of him. Particularly with the guys he'll be surrounded with on our offensive line. I think it's okay for both teams if they have something else in mind, another move that for one, fixes the offensive line or at least adds to it meaningfully. And the other one, you know, obviously going and getting another running back.
So the Titus Howard part of it, let me explain that as well. The Texans were in the middle of two trades. The other is Titus Howard, who is a former first-round pick, primarily has played right tackle in his career. They send him to the Browns, who badly need to rebuild the offensive line. Andrew Berry last week said, you know, it's not going to be all in the draft and it's not going to be all in free agency. He said, look at what the Bears have done, draft, trade, and free agency. That's kind of our model. They give up a fifth-round pick. They had 3 fifth-round picks. They have their own. They have a 5 they got from the Raiders for Kenny Pickett and a 5 they got from the Bengals for Joe Flacco. They're all kind of bunched up in the same neighborhood, all within about 10 picks of each other. Reportedly, it is the Raiders pick, the highest of the 3 number 5s, that is going to Houston. George Warhop, the Browns' new offensive line coach, who was in Baltimore with Todd Monken and is coming to Cleveland, was in Houston in 2022, so he had Titus Howard there. Howard played a lot of guard last year. When Trent Brown was playing right tackle, they kicked Howard inside. He played both right guard and left guard. Joel Bitonio, his status up in the air, might retire. You might put Howard at right tackle. You might put him at right guard. You might put him at left guard. Either way, he has position flex. Now, he's been a better pass blocker than a run blocker for the most part, if you look at his grades in his career. But he gives the Browns, for a fifth-round pick, and they did sweeten his contract. They extended him, reportedly. It gives them a versatile piece as they try to build a new offensive line for a fifth-round pick. So for them, it's a win, but I'm with you. The Texans have to figure out what exactly it is they are doing, and I'm sure Nick Sirianni has an idea. Remember, last year they sent Laremy Tunsil packing. So he is not afraid to make bold moves on his offensive line, but they keep going bold. You got to see some results one way or the other. Max Crosby, let's get to him. We ended the regular season. Max Crosby is on IR. He's not happy he's on IR. Everything is falling apart. Pete Carroll gets fired. People think Max Crosby's done. The Raiders try to walk that back and say, hey, we're cool with Max. We don't want him to go anywhere. Our friend Albert Breer over the MMQB reported on Monday that he thinks a Max Crosby trade could happen as early as this week, which I think raised some eyebrows. There are teams with multiple first-round picks. For example, the Dallas Cowboys. They need an edge rusher after that other guy got sent to Green Bay. Teams like the Bears, who don't have multiple first-round picks, but they badly need a pass rush. People in Chicago last year wanted Myles Garrett. This year, they want Max Crosby. Recently, Caleb Williams went on Max Crosby's podcast. That raised a lot of eyebrows. Frank, if, and this is a big if a trade were to happen, where do you think a good landing spot for Crosby would be?
I'm not going outside the box here. There's only one team that really comes to mind, and it's the Los Angeles Rams, and for many reasons. First, they have a lot more salary cap space than you would think for a team that has a lot of stars and has had a lot of success because they've drafted so well. And I do get it, Ed. We just talked about this. We've talked about it previously on the show. They got a lot of guys who are going to have to pay coming up, but that's a future less need problem. That ain't a today less need problem. Right now, the Rams should be thinking, we have a quarterback who just won MVP, but he's 38 years old. We think we were the best team in football last year. We just happened that game in Seattle goes a little bit differently in week 16. We're playing the NFC Championship game at home, maybe. Maybe we go win a Super Bowl. I'm sure that's their mindset because they have every reason to believe that. They are in a Super Bowl window where they should feel like they're one of the 2-3 best teams in football. How do you maximize this? No pun intended. But you go make a move for Max Crosby. Like, this makes so much sense for me. And by the time you got to figure it out with your young guys, Matthew Stafford's deal might be coming off the books at that point. That's how you pay Jared Verse and all those guys. So I just think this is easy. Like, this is a done deal. You got an extra first-round pick. You can go chase a Super Bowl. Why wouldn't you? I know the old – it hasn't come up in the last couple of years of the FM picks era Rams, but that's still in their DNA, and I still think the Rams are going to be the team to make a push for Max Crosby.
See, I'm probably biting on the hook here, and I shouldn't given the past history, but I think it's interesting that Jerry Jones made it a point to do two things during the combine. Number one, get themselves out of any salary cap trouble very impressively, frankly. And not only that, borrow from the future in a way that is probably more suggestive than his words, that this is it. Like, they're piling in now. Like, this is the window, and they're gonna get crushed down the road. It's going to happen. Eventually, they're going to have to deal with the salary cap ramifications. I think Max Crosby likes the Cowboys. I think he would like to play for the Cowboys. I think he is still a star-level player that is attractive to Jerry, the way he carries himself, what he brings to the team, what he brings to the locker room. There's a leadership element that I think Jerry would love there. Plus, given the assets that they already have on that defensive line, I mean, you'd have a hard time convincing me that the Cowboys wouldn't have the most difficult defensive line rotation to deal with in the NFL next year. And that's saying something. I mean, I think it would be unbelievable if they added him. I just keep going back to Jerry saying, and again, he said this before, and I know we're not supposed to bite on it, but the way that they have manipulated their cap to gain access to this money is suggestive to me that there's still a splash here. And I think Jerry is feeling himself a little bit, because even though he did move off of Micah Parsons, let's be honest. I mean, you know, the pieces he added, they were net positive additions. Like, it felt good, some of what you saw from the trade pieces that they ultimately acquired. And I truly believe that Jerry knows the offense is going to be okay. We got to fix this defense any way we can. And how many potential superstars, and I think he could be a superstar playing on that line, and I'm talking for not one season, but maybe a couple seasons. How many of those opportunities do we really have to add? This is it. And you have the picks, by the way, to do it. So
yeah,
I still like the Cowboys, and that's only because I'm stupid and I keep listening to Jerry when he says they're going to spend more money.
Well, the only caveat there in the Cowboys, and I'm with you, I think it makes too much sense. The caveat there is that Christian Parker, the new DC, who comes from Philadelphia, right, he has said that they're going to play a 3-4. Now, that would be a switch from what they've been playing. When you talk to the Cowboys people, they're like, yeah, I mean, that's what he said, but it's not really going to be a 3-4, right? I mean, it's not really a 3-4. Max Crosby's not a 3-4 player.
He's not. But if you run a hybrid,
it's going to be. Yeah, it's not like they're totally tearing the thing down and we're playing a 3-4. That's reports of their 3-4 are a little bit exaggerated, I think. So I think the Cowboys make sense. I also think there's a world in which they don't trade him. But I've said for months, if I'm the Raiders, I would trade Max Crosby. Period. Real quick, the Commanders are going to cut Marshawn Lattimore. Boy, that trade was, I hate to use the word bust, but that trade did not work at all. They got bold 2 years ago at the trade deadline when they had Jaden Daniels and they were flying. They eventually made the NFC Championship game. Lattimore got there injured. The hammy eventually got back on the field, didn't play well, and then last year got hurt again. They saved money on the salary cap, but they gave up some primo picks for Marshawn Lattimore. And that one, guys, did not work out. Quick thought on that from anyone?
Yeah, like you said, just some trades don't work out. And at the time I thought, okay, that makes sense to me. And now it just blew up in their face. It was just a bad trade. Didn't work out.
Cleared cap space for the Max Crosby person, I guess.
They also badly need a pass rusher. They need to be in the conversation as well. Just saying. This has been a fun conversation, however, gentlemen. This is going to do it for this edition of Inside Coverage. I promise you, there is no offseason. It's going to get this much more interesting as the days progress. We're back with another show on Wednesday, and then next week is the start of the new league year. Next year is the NFL New Year. We're going to have party hats and fireworks and streamers. Maybe we all wear tuxedos for the start of free agency. Go big on New Year's Eve. Maybe. I'm just teasing.
I'll wait for you to do that. Yeah.
I've done that before.
I might have a tuxedo t-shirt. I don't think I actually have a tuxedo. Yeah,
that would Canadian be tuxedo, maybe, sure. For me. Here,
yeah. Canadian tuxedo.
Yeah. What did John C. Riley say? I like to wear a tuxedo t-shirt. Says, I like to party. What was the line for Ricky Bobby? I can't remember the line. It was a great line.
And on that note, we're going to end on Ricky Bobby. For Charles Robinson and for Frank Schwab, my name is Andrew Siciliano. Thank you for listening to or watching, or both for that matter, Inside Coverage on Yahoo.